Even going through a global pandemic, I believe that we can find joy in everyday life. I'm so happy to be interviewing today's guest who brings and weaves the idea of joy into everyday, what she calls everyday joy. Finding joy in the simplicity of life, the mundane tasks that we have to do on a daily basis. So before we start this podcast, I'd like you to just close your eyes and picture it for a moment. Pure joy. It could be sitting in the sun on a warm day. It could be about to eat a beautiful meal. It could be sinking into a bath full of essential oils. What does joy mean to you? And what is the sensation of joy? Where do you hold joy? Where do you feel it in your body? Today's guest is a wonderful woman who creates space for other women to feel safe and to be them wholeheartedly, activating joy within them and sharing more joy with the world. Hello and welcome to the Magnetic Woman podcast. I'm Pandora Paloma, life and business coach for women. I'm an author, speaker, mum of one, an all-round miracle and magnetism supporter. It is my mission to create change, to change how women think and feel, see their power and use their feminine force to become magnetic. I help women to live a life in alignment, elevate their mindset, expand their beliefs, and live their vision in life and business. Now for me, magnetism is about being flexible, resilient, in tune with intuition, and really harnessing the power of our mindset and beliefs with aligned action. It's learning to let life flow, not always striving and pushing, but also learning to be open to receiving in new and magical ways. This podcast is a sprinkle of magnetic energy from my corner of the world to yours. Welcome everybody to today's podcast. I'm thrilled to be joined with the lovely Tamu, aka Dr. Joy. She is a trauma-informed somatic and holistic life coach and the founder of Live360. So I think it's probably best if I just allow you to introduce yourself, Tamu.
Hello. Hello, Paloma. Thank you very much for having me. Yes, my name is Tamu Thomas. And yes, that's what I do. I am a trauma-informed somatic coach. But over the period of lockdown, I keep talking like it was in the past. Our pandemic is still here and alive and well. I've had the opportunity to really reflect on what I do, who I do it with, and what it supports them to do. So I now am owning the fact that I help freelance and entrepreneurial women take care of themselves so that they can take care of their businesses. So that is what I do. Mm-hmm. And I'm absolutely delighted to be here talking about joy, because I believe, not just I believe, I know, my experience shows me that for many of us, joy is a great entry route to being able to hold our feelings rather than abandon and run away from them. So yeah, I like to talk about feelings and help people to feel their feelings and know that they have dominion over said feelings.
Mm-hmm. The theme for this series is transformation, and I so love everything that you talk about in relation to joy. And I think when we think about or speak of transformation, it often feels like this sort of big thing. Perhaps it's a bit sort of out of reach, or perhaps we, you know, believe that it will be a very traumatic thing to have to sort of go through a transformation. And I wanted to speak to you because I believe that actually in finding joy, we can find transformation for ourselves, you know, big and small. And so tell me a little bit about, I suppose, your own experience with joy and, you know, using joy as a
as a way to sort of hold feelings and create sort of transformation, I suppose.
Well, I, you know, my origins, my natural self, my innate way of being is a very joyful way of being. However, growing up as a black child of immigrant parents on an estate that was quite rough in the late 70s and 80s meant that I was presented with quite limiting ideals of what it was to be serious, what it was to be able to make your way and make a mark in a world that didn't necessarily accept you. So I learned very quickly that my joy was seen as weakness, was seen as very frivolous. And I internalized messages very, very early on that in order for me to be serious and successful, I needed to be very guarded, very protective, and keep things to myself. And that strength was the pinnacle of what it was to be a human being. Because my parents as immigrants had to struggle and strive a lot to be able to have what they had and to be able to create opportunities for themselves. And also thinking back to the climate then, thinking about things like feminism, my mum was forever on a board or going to some kind of meeting that was talking about racial or gender equality. So I grew up seeing people achieve success, but success was a result of strength, grit, and struggle. So I internalized that and made myself wrong for being joyful and playful. And I was still joyful and playful, but not as joyful and playful as I would have been if I felt safe to be my natural self. And to cut a long story short, it meant that I believed that I could achieve and work my way hard into joy, happiness, and all of those really lovely, warm, fuzzy ways of being, which meant that I lived in burnout. My background is social work. I was a social worker for local authorities, and then I worked directly for CAFCA. So I did a lot of court work, and I worked as an independent social worker. And social work is burnout city. If you're not burnt out, you're not doing your job properly. So not only did I internalize messages that said that working to the brink of burnout was how you showed strength, I worked in a career whereby if you weren't burn out, you weren't doing your job properly. And it was very easy to burn out because when you're working with very vulnerable families, you are literally working with the possibility that dropping the ball, missing something, not making the correct assessment, analysis, and recommendations could literally lead to loss of life. And we saw that with things like Baby P, Victoria Climbier. So I was very used to working in burnout. And to be quite honest, it served me for some time until it didn't. And I started to experience dis-ease, compromised immune system, lots of issues with that, and emotional difficulties in that I started to experience what was diagnosed as severe moderate depression, anxiety and panic attacks. And I was like, whoa, 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 I need to pump the brakes. And in having therapy and actually understanding what coaching is and having some coaching, what I realized was that my whole life was based on achievement and proving myself. And the joy I had were such finite snapshots. They were not able to do anything to create harmony. So it was an accident. I literally went and did a positive psychology course, and we were invited to do a keep a diary, a mood diary that kept a record of when we had a sense of achievement, achievement, connection, and enjoyment. And what I realized was there was loads of achievement, there was some connection, and there was only one opportunity for enjoyment, which was when I took my daughter and her friend roller skating, and that was an accident. I was able to enjoy myself because my daughter was busy helping her friend who couldn't skate. And I thought, oh, there's a clue here. And the joy journey began.
Wow, what a brilliant, Well, gritty, but a bit in transformation in itself, you know, that sort of turning, what I often call turning points, like something has to happen for us to almost take a bit of a life audit, like, where am I going and is this working for me? And, you know, how do I shift into something that does? And beautiful that you can understand that actually it's in finding that joy, you know, something that often gets put on the back burner. So, you know, I think it feels into the idea that women should put themselves last, you know, the provider. And as you say, you know, even as a, of course, as a social worker, it's about supporting others. It's about, you know, making sure that those things don't happen. It's a huge responsibility. And of course you it sounds like you weren't getting the support that you needed to keep yourself, you know, in a place where you were able to sort of hold that, which is, you know, where burnout comes through. So the idea of sort of achievement and proving yourself came to me there, and this sort of outside kind of, you know, it's not, it's more about, you know, understand, looking at these outside things make me who I am, but of course they're not who you are. So did you find that actually that realization made you think more about who you are, not what you do?
Oh, absolutely. And everything was taking me back to my early years and remembering. So also I turned 40, and I remember ever since I was in high school looking at Cosmopolitan and all those magazines with Life Begins at 40, women are in their prime at 40, women are in the, men are in their prime at 21, women are in their prime in their 40s. So I had internalized the message that 40 was my, like, I really believed 40 was my magic number. And I thought that 40 would come, the light would turn on, and that would be, I would have arrived. And I had a wonderful 40th birthday. And then it dawned on me, this magic and wonder, I had done nothing to prepare for it other than work. I had done nothing to explore who I was, what makes me tick, what I want. I could have told you very clearly what I don't want, but to actually be able to tell you what I do want and what I really enjoy, I would not have been able to tell you that at all. And what I realized was that I was living on the edge. I was living on the edge. I had a view of 180 degrees, so half my life, the parts that were good to show, considered to be a good mum, great social worker, good friend, all those sorts of things. And I focused on that, and anything that didn't fit within that, I buried, I packed away neatly, I chucked it away. That's what I thought, but it was leaking out all over the place. And I realized to myself that I had been continuously denying myself to myself, all because I was uncomfortable with feeling. Anything I could do to neutralize so that I could get on with the doing, get on with the achieving, I was doing it. Busy, busy, busy. Busy was my badge of honor. Friends saying, oh gosh, I've got to book in with you months in advance because you're so busy. Busy doing what? I don't know. But that was like, yeah, I'm a busy person. This validates me. I'm important because I'm busy. And what I realized was I didn't know a damn thing about myself. And I started to, I spoke to a friend of mine who is a, can't remember what her title is, let's just say she's a psychotherapeutic counsellor. And I kept saying, oh, I'm having a midlife breakdown. She said, this sounds like an existential crisis. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, that's what it is. And I started to think, well, what is the underlying factor here? I had conflated seriousness with being boring. My life was boring. Everything about what I was doing was fitting into some kind of shell of who I was. And as I started to explore my joy, and I want to be very clear here, when I talk about joy, I'm not talking about happiness. The way we talk about happiness in Western culture is a very Hollywood, saccharine sweet, fleeting kind of emotion. We're not talking about eudaimonia, which is a much more nourishing, holistic type of happiness. We talk more about a hedonistic happiness. When I talk about joy, I go to the dictionary because I try to be very intentional about the words I use. And joy, the dictionary was conflating it with happiness. And I Googled and I found a website called Theopedia, which is like a biblical website. And the first part of their description of joy is a state of mind and an orientation of the heart. It's a settled state of contentment, confidence, and hope. You could be experiencing grief. You can still have a level of contentment. You can still have a level of confidence. You can still have a level of hope. You cannot be happy and grieving at the same time. So what I found was that by following the joy, by following the joy that exists within me, because it's inside, it's not outside. So when people talk about finding joy, actually, I believe that what we do is we find things in the ordinary that activate, that contact the joy that is already within us. And I found that I got lots of nourishment from doing things like observing the nature activity in my garden, from the squirrels, the pigeons, the magpies, the trees, the different growth. And like Brené Brown says, you can't numb, if you numb painful, I can't remember exactly what she says, but she says something about you can't numb some emotions without numbing others. If you numb pain, you're numbing joy as well. What I found was the flip side of that. When you open yourself up to joy, you're opening up yourself to feel. So as well as there was the joy piece in me being able to look at the sky and almost, you know, have glassy eyes and my daughter be rolling her eyes like, oh gosh, mum's doing that thing again, I also found that it enabled me to grow my capacity to feel, full stop. And as the capacity to feel grew, I was able to contact things like grief and sorrow and anger and sadness and stuff that made me feel helpless at times or confused. And rather than run away from them, because I know joy, I understand joy, I was able to use the joy to nourish the discomfort so that I could sit with it, so that I could be present from it, so that I could let that discomfort know that I have space for it, I take ownership, I know it's mine, and listen to what was underneath those feelings so that I could then start to be able to soothe and nourish, I guess, the cause rather than focus on the symptoms. And that just took me into a place whereby I was able to really honestly and truthfully befriend myself, so much so that I'm now in a position where romance is my thing. Whereas it was strength and achievement and striving, romance is my thing. I have a romantic relationship with myself. I have a romantic relationship with life. I have a romantic relationship with my work. And if it doesn't feel like romance, I don't want it. And caveat, romance isn't easy. Romance, you have to keep showing up for it. You have to keep holding space for the parts that you don't quite like or are triggering something in you that you need to address or soothe or whatever language you want to use. So I'm not talking about a walk in the park, but I am talking about a continuous choice to love and love and love.
And you've really expressed this so beautifully. You know, you open up the box. If you want to feel more joy, then you're going to have to feel perhaps a bit more pain, as you say, the guilt that comes through, the rawness that it is to be human, you know. And you know, it's a false like template to believe that it's all love and light. That's, I mean, we both know spiritual bypassing, it's not possible. There is darkness, so you cannot have one without the other. It's a duality, you know. And I love
and what beauty comes from darkness. If you think about, you know that I love my nature analogies. If you think about when you plant a seed, you plant the seed in the darkness of the earth. It gets fertilized in the darkness of the earth. And that fertilization enables it to grow and meet the sun.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I always come back to Mother Nature whenever I'm feeling a darkness or working, you know, with something that feels raw you know, grief has been a big thing for me, you know, in the last year. Mm-hmm. I always turn to nature. I always turn to some, you know, some earth, to the trees, to say, support me, you know, mm-hmm. let me give you something and turn it into something more beautiful, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. So I think there's something really beautiful in that. And, you know, how can women start to find their joy? As you say, it's something that exists within us. That, mm-hmm. what is that turning point? What would you advise for anyone listening who wants to feel more joy in their world? You know, where can they start?
It starts with slowing down. And that is one of the biggest challenges that we modern women face, because we have been programmed, we have been conditioned into this fallacy that we're great multitaskers. No human being is a great multitasker. Yes, we do have skills, but multitasking is the highway ticket to burnout. We don't believe that we have an inherent right to rest. We believe that we need to earn rest, and that invariably means working to a point where we're knackered, so we've really earned the sleep, so that the sleep isn't about restoration and rejuvenation, it's just about recovery. So we're walking around in a cycle of depletion and recovery from the depletion, not revitalizing ourselves, not putting ourselves in the position where we are in our optimal states. So the first thing I would say to any woman, any person that wants to create space to contact joy, is you actually need to create the space. You actually need to take the time. And something that I have found to be very helpful in being able to take that space and make the time, I wouldn't have phrased it like this before, but my coach phrased it like this, and I'm like, boom, this is what I haven't been able to articulate. It's a process of auditing what is good, what is great, and letting go of the good so that you have more space for the great. When you make space for the great and you can see that you can still have the impact, you can still create the income by doing less and focusing on that greatness, you then have space to actually connect with the joy. And I say that because I do not want to give the impression that I don't understand that we need to earn money, but I do believe that it is possible to earn, to create, to receive a healthy income without depleting yourself. So when you're able to trust that it is possible for you to look after yourself without neglecting your bottom line, you'll then be able to take action to do nothing, basically. And doing nothing, it's not as simple as doing nothing. It's about creating time to weave moments of connection or moments of stillness into your day. So one of the first things I recommend to women is to look at what you ordinarily do and see how you can make that a more nourishing experience, because most of us are walking around this world emotionally malnourished. We're walking around in a state of emotionally neglecting ourselves. So most of us have a bath or a shower every day. How about giving yourself 2 more minutes in that shower? If you want to be really fancy, put a couple of drops of your favorite essential oil in the shower tray so that you're having an aromatic experience. And when you're washing your body, wash your body slowly. And as you wash, take time to connect with your body, feel your skin. So if you usually use a washcloth or something, do that first. Use your hands, feel your skin. Take a moment to appreciate what it feels like to touch yourself, what your skin feels like against your own skin, and thank your body. Thank you, arms, for helping me carry the shopping. Thank you, feet, for always serving me, taking me where I need to go, even when I can't be bothered. Thank you, stomach, even though usually I focus on the fact that you're a bit squidgy, you help me digest my food and you separate the vitamins and minerals and nutrients from the waste. Just take a moment to connect and thank yourself for being yourself. And that's when you start to venture into the land of actually meaningfully, in an embodied way, accepting that you, as you are enough. We all need to wash. Most of us do it every day. So that 2 minutes extra, or maybe 1 minute extra every day over the course of the week, you've given yourself like 10 minutes of some loving time. And all of that is cumulative. All of that adds up until one day you put a t-shirt on and you don't feel the need, like a tight fitting t-shirt on. You think, sod it, I'm not holding my stomach in. This stomach is beautiful. It's not an ornament. It's not a showpiece. So I'm very, very keen on people looking at their lives as they are now and seeing what they can weave in so that they gently start to grow into bigger, bolder, essential care practices.
I really romancing yourself, you know, like the sort of term self-love, you know, in its initial stages, there was a lot of, well, it's bubble baths, and it's like, no, my friend, self-love is, you know, many, many things. And actually that romancing yourself, it's I do a 6-week intuitive eating and living course. It's now a self-study thing. And I used to, part of the homework, take yourself out on a date, take yourself somewhere, savor the food, read the book or read the paper, give yourself an hour just for you, just for you, you know. And it's that, yeah, because I deserve this.
I know that it's a practice.
Yeah.
This is very counterintuitive. So we need to give ourselves time. If you haven't done that, you may feel self-conscious. You may even feel like you want to jump out of your own skin because you're not used to being present with yourself in that way. But it's a practice. We were all babies at one point in time. None of us walked out of the womb. Over a period of a year, we learned, we watched people, we observed people. We thought, oh, right, they've got these things that I've got that dangle from the bottom part of their body, and they move them, and they observe, they watch, they practice, they fall, they get up, they fall, they get up, until the next thing you know, your children are running around like Speedy Gonzales. We need to, like, quite often I will speak to my coaching clients and say to them, like, treat yourself like you're a baby. And I really, really mean that, that very gentle, tender, delicate encouragement and support that supports transformation, that is very deeply rooted, that is long lasting, and then evolves as you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we, this year, I feel the planet is going through what is, you know, indicative of a very deeply transformational time. How do you believe that we will move forward from this collectively?
Do you know what, Paloma? I haven't got a Danny LaRue. Like, I really, really don't know. Because what I observe is that the gap between those that are looking at this as an opportunity and those that are looking at this like a threat is massive. And I think to myself, rather than trying to figure that out and guess, I just want to be present every day, be alive with what's happening every day, and treat this like an adventure.
The ride of life.
Yeah, literally, like, let's be present for the realness. Let's stop this. I just want to be happy. I just want to feel good. There was nowhere that said that that's what life was. What we are promised that life will be real. So I guess what I hope is that there will be more and more of us that are open to showing up for, taking up space within the realness of life. Above all else, what I hope is that this leads to a maturation, that this leads us to a place where we've started, but where we go deeper on having the conversations we need to have. At the moment, I see a lot of conversations we want to have dressed up as conversations we need to have, but there still seems to be quite a lot of immaturity and quite a lot of ego dodging or ego massaging going on. So I hope that this takes us into a space where actually, it might not even be a conversation. It might be that it takes us into a space of deep witnessing, deep listening, deep eye gazing, deep contacting each other on an energetic level, not trying to intellectualize and rationalize all the time, making space to understand that sometimes that's just how it is, and that's just how it is. Nothing more, nothing less. So that's what I hope. What I think, I don't even think it's my business to think. I think that it's just about me being present and not reactive, but responsive to what's emerging.
Mm. And I think that idea of being present, this is also where we find transformation. It's often the starting point of any transformation is being present. It's acknowledging things outside of ourselves and things inside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's witnessing those versus being, you know, someone who is living without that presence and connection to oneself and to the world around us.
Or even mistaking intelligence and knowledge for connection and wisdom. People like us that like to learn, that like development, that like to experiment and test things out, there's a very fine line between numbing with information and distancing yourself with what you're learning and the things that you know theoretically, and being present with your feelings. So we live in our feelings first. We live in our bodies first. So I hope that there is a growing movement of people that are prepared to really take the concept of embodiment seriously and start to live in their bodies, in their feelings, and know that actually understanding your body, understanding your feelings will do much more for you and your life and whatever it is you are wanting from your life than mindset work. Our mind is part of our body. Our brain is alive in every cell of our body.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, embodiment has been a big theme in terms of my learning and growth in the last couple of years. And it's something I'm seeing we're talking about more and more. But of course, anything that's going on in the mind is going on in the body, and you can't erase that connection. It doesn't work like that. A word that's been coming through for me a lot within my own world and within my practice as a coach is ownership. Mm-hmm. You know, owning our joy, owning our abilities, taking ownership to see a change, and also integrity. You know, am I being who I say I am? And that is so much part of that embodiment process. You know, sort of, we call it, you know, there's a dissonance. Joe Dispenza calls it sort of the gap. There's who we present to the world, and then there's who we truly are. And he calls it, you know, the gap, and we have to close the gap. I see that as an opportunity. It's like the greater the gap, the greater the opportunity, because you get to come back to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What a beautiful gift. What a beautiful, you know, experience to live. And so much of that, it comes from allowing the transformation, being present, you know, opening up, as you say, to the joy and the vulnerability and the raw. It's sort of, it's almost like we're using this as an opportunity to open up and really look at the ways that we're thinking and feeling and being, and you know, start to really truly be the people that we say we are, and everything that comes with that. If you encourage people to use, you know, one tool for transformation, what would that be? You know, when you think of transformation, what is a tool that you would use, or that you would, you know, weave into your world to allow it?
It's difficult to pinpoint one thing, because we are sophisticated, complex organisms. We are an ecosystem, and everything within that ecosystem contributes. I guess the most at that it's all very powerful, but the most powerful and profound introduction was the breath. Being present with my breath, understanding how my breath feels, allowing myself space to actually breathe in a way that was nourishing me rather than keeping me alive. And to begin with, that meant me having 5 reminders in my phone that said breathe, and me stopping what I was doing to take some time to do some big, deep belly breaths with long exhalations, because that is an invitation to be present with what is alive and going on right now. Your breath is the truth. Like it's happening right now. It's not about being perfect. It's about doing what it needs to do. So actually making time for breath work opened me up to many things, because, you know, talking about this joy, it wasn't easy. When I first began this iteration of my relationship with joy, I didn't trust it. It felt too good to be true. It felt like someone was going to come and pull the rug from underneath me. It felt like these things never last, because those are the narratives that we're taught, especially when we conflate joy and happiness. So it helped me be present with what was there rather than running away, which then helped me be present with the other things that were emerging through me. So through the breath, I was then able to, rather than this concept of manifesting where we do this to get that, I was able to start asking, well, God, ancestors, spirit, universe, you know, you name it, I'm down with all of it. What would you have me do? What would you have me know? How would you like me to serve? How would you like me to show up? And that's when the real beauty of who I am started to emerge, because I wasn't confining myself to the knowledge, these things that I have within my conscious mind. I was then able to open myself up on a more energetic and spiritual kind of plane. So I was able to open up to what I know to be true and more, in a way that felt safe and grounded and supported.
Yeah. It's a powerful process. And when you find it, I mean, for me, that sort of spiritual practice, often turning things over to, you know, the unknown, the invisible, mm-hmm. actually has ultimately, and you know, I will use the word joy, it has really helped me live with my joy. There's a mm-hmm. certain level of trust that I'm safe and I'm supported and things are working out for me because I'm choosing my joy. You know, mm-hmm. it's for me, the element of spirituality, and that's the spiritual body or energetic body, if you want to call it that, was my anchor into joy. It was like, I can feel all of the things, but ultimately I'm safe. I'm enough. Mm-hmm. I'm worthy. I'm complete. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really beautiful place to allow yourself. You know, it comes from what we choose, but the allowing, the opening to it. Tell me, what are your own sort of daily rituals then? You've talked about spirituality in that piece, that plane. What are your own sort of daily rituals that keep you anchored and joyful ultimately?
They change because I get bored, so I change things up. And recently it has had to change because I have experienced what is exponential growth in my business at this level. And what I know is that with growth like that, my self-care, taking care of myself, meeting my foundational essential needs needs to be like 5 times whatever the growth is. So my mornings are very, very important. It starts with waking up, having a look around me, orienting myself to the space so that I am present where I am, and also so that I know that it's damn well time to wake up and not to press that dastardly snooze button. And then I get up, I stand up, and I look at, I've got some affirmation posters. Well, I've got one affirmation poster, and I stand up and I look at that affirmation poster whilst I drink a glass of water. And then I stand still, paying attention to my breath. At the moment, I am obsessed with Beyoncé's song Bigger. from whatever album that's from, Black is King album or whatever it's called, Jungle Book, I don't know, Lion King. So I listen to that and I stand with my hand on my tummy, hand on my heart, just feeling my breath and feeling those words being pumped around my body by my heart. And then I do some movement. So weights are my thing. And as you're getting older and you're heading towards perimenopause and menopause, we need to do the weights. Our bones need it. So I do a range of kettlebell exercises. And then I do however many rounds I feel like of sun salutations. So that's my morning. And then I may do some journaling or I may read something. In my membership group, we meet every Monday, Wednesday and Friday morning for a co-working time before we start our day. So that was at 7 a.m. It's now at 6 a.m. Because the children have gone back to school. So invariably, I do that every day, not online every day. So I'll just start doing some work, planning my day, thinking about how I want to use my day, the way I want to feel throughout my day so that I can anchor myself into that. And then I have my reminders to breathe properly. At lunchtime, I will listen to a guided meditation. Invariably, it will be Open-Hearted Presence by Tara Brach. I might give myself a moment to visualize. And then at the end of the day, I say a prayer of thanks. I express gratitude for things that I experienced, things that came from inside me. And I will journal a short description of my day, how it would be even better, what went well. That is the biggest section where I really big myself up, set an intention for the next day, take my magnesium nighttime tablets, read something, and invariably, 1 second into the book is on the side of the bed because I've fallen asleep whilst holding the book. And those are my main rituals day in, day out.
Beautiful, beautiful. I like the idea of listening to a song and imagining those words just coming into your body in your space. I think music is a very powerful way to shift energy and raise frequency and, you know, sort of, yeah, just be, you know, to allow joy, you know, dancing is a very powerful way to bring joy in. Thank you so, so much. It feels like it's been a very nourishing, open conversation, which of course, you know, is what finding joy and transformation is all about. Mm-hmm. I would love to ask as the final question, what does being a magnetic woman mean to you?
Being a magnetic woman means to me being your true authentic self, whatever that is, knowing that that fluctuates according to hormones, moods, whatever it is that's going on for you in life, but knowing that the core of you remains and your people will see you. And you know, magnets, we attract or we repel. So you repel the people that aren't supposed to be there, and you're a complete magnet for the people that are supposed to be there. And you model for each other, you co-regulate each other, and it's just beautiful, 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 because you don't have to pretend. You can be who you are and know that you can be flawed, you can make mistakes, you can be as big as you are, and none of that matters because the magnetic connection is real.
The core of you remains, but you every day may demand a different you, you know. That's okay. You don't have to be, you know, in the box. Thank you so much, Tamo. Where can people find you?
You can find me on my Instagram is my kind of main playground, and I'm there at Live360. That's LiveThreeSixty. Or if you pop over to my website, which is www.live360.com, again, all letters, and join my mailing list, you will find me there because I'm choosing to use my mailing list more effectively than I do Instagram.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you so, so, so much.
Thank you for having me, Paloma. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you so much for tuning into this podcast. Series 2 is all about transformation, so do dive into other episodes where I'm interviewing incredible light workers, healers, shamans, coaches to discover their own journey with transformation. If you enjoyed this podcast, please do leave me a review. It all helps. And if you yourself are looking to find some transformation of your own, please do head to the link in the bio for my 4-week course, The Magnetic Woman, where we are going to be learning how to clear the path of old beliefs and limitations, become new with new thoughts and belief systems, understand magnetism and my version of creating a life that you love, and then how to hold that vision into 2021 and beyond. The course starts on the 25th of October, and I am welcoming you with open arms. Thanks for tuning in.